best match ever.
We the best.
I just had an out-of-body experience.
The biggest match in pro wrestling history.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
This is great.
This is awesome.
Hey guys, Braden Harrington here. Well, this is a dated show. This is a best match ever from last year, 2021, Shark Week. But we thought we'd give it a freebie here on the main feed. But check us out, patreon.com/upnext, because we have so many best matches ever. We've recently done best match ever. Sean Waltman, Razor Ramon, Shawn Michaels. We've done rivalries, different match types, just like this one. And so much more. Go check us out. It's only $5 for the North American tier. The beginning of the month is the best time to try us out. And yeah, we hope you have a good Shark Week. And I'm not sure if anyone knows this, but sharks don't have bones. I mean, no, I've said too much. Enjoy. Braden Harrington here with Davey Portman for Up Next, the Patreon. And this is a best
match ever.
Yeah, it's been a minute, I feel like. We did one last month.
Did we?
Jerry Lynn.
We do one every month.
Yeah, yeah.
What was it? Jerry Lynn, RVD. Yeah.
It's lit.
Yeah, it's Shark Week.
It's Shark Week.
Rage is on. How much?
Shark facts.
Yeah, you got some?
Sharks don't have bones.
Oh, I know. That was the first one that came up on Google, right?
Just quickly. You don't even have to click a link. They just give you the top 10 things already. I didn't
Aren't
know.
Teeth bones?
I think so. I don't know.
And wasn't that video we were just watching on sharks being like, sharks have loads of teeth?
So therefore...
So contradictory.
Yeah, well...
But sharks are great.
Yeah, so we're learning so much about sharks. I mean, this one time, this... facility tried to make sharks have bigger brains, and it didn't really work out.
It didn't work out at
all. So we talked all about that.
Don't try and stop Alzheimer's, guys.
Yeah.
It doesn't work out well.
Especially with sharks. Don't like, try to make smarter sharks.
No.
Is what we learned from this true story of Deep Blue Sea from 1999, which we did the review of, to kick off Shark Week.
Oh, yeah.
Have you caught up in, have you watched Shark's Tale yet? Have you done anything shark-related?
I really haven't had a chance to do anything.
Have you beaten anyone at pool lately?
At pool?
You'd be like a pool shark.
Oh, is that what you're called if you're good at pool?
Yeah, if you wrestle someone, you're a pool shark.
Where are we playing pool?
I don't know. Should we get a pool
table? Not until Friday.
You can fit one in our place.
After Friday, we can play pool and go to the Rippers. It's all good. Everything open.
I'm going to a fucking rave on Friday. Fuck y'all. Yeah. Yeah, so have you done any shark things? You're going to... It starts now. We're currently in Shark
Week. We're in Shark Week. We're in the midst of Shark Week.
Yeah.
Not today, but I've got... we've got a bit of time... we're recording this on Tuesday, actually, pre-NXT, pre-hopefully Gargano becoming two-time NXT champion.
Yeah.
We'll see.
By the time you're listening to this...
But we got some time tomorrow before we do our top five show, so I might, I don't know, watch a Shark's Tale. We've been bumping Ludacris quite a lot.
Ludacris? LL Cool J.
LL Cool J.
Ludacris is in Fast and Furious.
That's right, yeah.
LL Cool J is the one in this movie, in Deep Blue Sea. Which is great. Hopefully everyone's looked up.
My hat is like a shark.
Yeah,
spin.
Yeah.
What Not a great like a shark's song. Cage.
My hat is like a shark's cage.
Yeah.
That'd be even sick. There should be a rap song called like,
My hat
shark,
is like
cage.
Shark cage.
Yeah, that's what we're here to talk about because we're such weirdos that we thought, how can we celebrate Shark Week? And we're wrestling fans. How does sharks tie in to wrestling? Well, we talked about piranhas.
We have.
On a best match ever with Damian
Abraham. Piranhas aren't sharks.
No, they're not. So we have looked up. The FMW has had shark matches. Apparently.
They have.
Okay. But it didn't look as good as that piranha thing. Mm. That was just straight up nasty. But there's the next best thing.
Shark cage.
Yeah,
match.
Like we have this show, Best Match Ever. Welcome any new patrons. If this is your first Best Match Ever,
what a first one to start.
Oh, absolutely.
Off. Not Misawa, any of those ones. No,
we go back and we look at some of the greatest matches in wrestling history. And when you think of match stipulations, because we've done Best Match Ever Hell in a Cell.
Yeah,
we've done Best Match Ever TLC.
That's right.
We've done all these kind of match stipulations. And to me, when I think of great wrestling stipulations, there's one thing that sticks out. The shark cage.
It's true.
It's the thing everyone gets excited about when they announce, and you know, you will be locked in a shark cage. Everyone loses their mind.
Of course.
So we thought we'd go back and look at some of the greatest shark cage matches in history.
Yeah.
How excited were you for this show?
Wow, I was so excited. I'm glad you dug up the list to find them. I could think of a few. Mm. So that the ones I had in my head, you've also chosen. But the list is posted on the Patreon feedback thread, guys. We always post what we're going to review for these shows. And they're all like on the network or on YouTube and stuff. But an interesting gimmick. To me, in the eras that we've talked about it, it was like, let's bring this back to sell a toy that you could make a shark cage. It's weird that, like, it sounds more scary than it does. A shark cage. So, therefore, in wrestling, I want to see a shark. I need to see a shark, but it has nothing. It's just the cage.
It's the cage
that they use to go diving and use so sharks don't fucking eat you. So, why not put a manager in the shark cage so, therefore, he can't interfere?
The gimmick makes sense because...
does it?
Well, yeah, it does. I mean, if you think of the idea of a cage match, the idea of a cage match is to keep everyone out.
Yeah.
But that's been ruined over years because everyone always gets in.
Because they're not putting
the
shark
cage.
The
idea is if you have a shark cage match, the manager is not only locked in this cage, but they're suspended above the ring.
Right.
So they can't interfere. And, well, we'll talk about ones where they do and ones where they don't and kind of what we prefer. But on paper, the idea does make sense. And it is kind of the ultimate blow-off for some of these feuds. And some of them involve the wrestlers actually being in a cage as well on top of it.
Yeah, yeah. There is some weird things. I'm trying to look up, like, the history of why this was a thing. I found one that was... something to do with big time wrestling, and it's Chief J Strongbow versus Bulldog Don Kent. And this is a match where they actually fight in the cage match.
Yes.
In the shark cage. It's tiny.
Yeah.
It's so stupid.
This one's had like terrible ratings.
It's so awful. It's just, you can't even, you're barely, you like, you're just in a shark cage. How can you do anything?
Yeah.
It's just smacking their heads against the posts of it. It's so ridiculous. So that is something that goes like way back. But other than that, it's like some of the ones you found and that we're going to also talk about. It's like, why was this like such a gimmick that they still decided to like stick with you? We've covered one of the most prolific ones, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and I kind of forgot it was even a shark cage match.
Yeah, because it didn't matter.
No, well, it did its job.
Yeah.
That was the thing.
Sting and Ric Flair is what
I think
we're
talking about. Me, and we'll get into it when we get into the matches, for me, the gimmick is sold by the manager. The person in there. The more ridiculous, scared of heights, claustrophobic, etc., the manager is, the more fun this gimmick can be. But we're going to go way, way back for our first match.
Yeah.
It's Georgia Championship Wrestling at the Omni Coliseum, 23rd of October, 1983. And this one, I don't know if you're aware, this is called the Last Battle of Atlanta. It's Tommy Rich versus Buzz Sawyer, and this is credited as the predecessor to Hell in a Cell. And this was actually kind of known as a lost holy grail of a match.
Right.
For years and years, there was no footage of this match. There were just some photos. WWE actually credit this match for the idea of Hell in a Cell.
And it's all because of a shark cage.
Because it's Tommy Rich and Buzz Sawyer in this... in this cage.
With a top.
It's a cell. It's not as wide as the cell, but it's a cell. And someone we talk about or have talked about quite a bit on Up Next, Paul Ellering, who we're actually going to get to later in the show as well.
That's right.
Is the manager suspended above the ring. well, above the cage,
yeah,
in a shark cage. And the gimmick here is if Buzz Sawyer, who Paul Ellering manages, if he loses the match, Paul Ellering must immediately face Ole Anderson inside this cell-like structure.
That's right. That's what we'll call it.
A cell-like structure. Yeah, I know Tommy Rich is one of your favorite wrestlers of all time.
Tommy Wildfire Rich is just the great... No, I love when we kind of watch this. Again, if you have listened to some of our best match ever, it was the Ric Flair Steamboat one. We watched a few that were like fan camera stuff. And this is one of those instances where this is on YouTube. And you can tell it fits that. If you look at the YouTube comments on this, it's like all these people are like, oh, I was looking for this for so long, or I was here, or like, oh man, like, wish I always heard about this.
I wonder where it, like, how it shows up.
Yeah.
Is someone just, like, going through their VHS collection and they're like, oh,
film this. Yeah. Yeah, it's weird.
It's odd because it wasn't, I think it was around, was it 2016 this came about? There's a whole Wikipedia on this. On just this match. Because it was such a lost match and people were trying to find it for a long time. And I believe if you dig hard enough, I watched this on YouTube like I think you did, it is available on the network.
Interesting.
It's within like the WCW section, I believe.
Okay.
But it's kind of very much buried there.
Interesting. Well, it reminds me, what did we do? An I Quit or something where there's two guys in a cage. It was very violent. We've talked about it. It was War Games or something. I'm not sure. It was a one-on-one. I think it was Tully.
Was it? Yeah. Tully Blanchard and, who was
Magnum,
it? Magnum. Magnum TA?
I think yes. So. It's kind of similar. It's like these guys are just locked in the cage and it's like, yeah, this is what it, like, this is manly men wrestling in a cage and they're fucking bleeding and stuff. Mm. And this is a fam camera and you can see like there's blood. Like,
oh yeah, you can see the blood.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into the match. Sawyer starts working the arm of Rich pretty early, and I'm pretty sure, again, there's no commentary and it's very grainy and old. I'm pretty sure he starts biting his head. So Tommy Rich is bleeding from the head very early. Tommy Rich, who's the baby face in this, just knees him in the balls quite a few times.
It's in the cell.
Hits a couple of low blows, and then Buzz Sawyer comes back by poking him in the eye. Rich is already just a bloody mess. But he starts to fight back with a kick to the face and then just this knee across the face of Buzz Sawyer, and then hits a nice-looking sit-out pile driver. Now, in this match, there's no referee in the ring. They're kind of on the outside, and to win, it's either by not answering the 10 count or pinfall. So as soon as this sit-out pile driver is hit...
Their pile drivers is one of the best moves. No wonder it's banned, though. Like,
it's the sit-out. It looks nasty.
I love it.
The ref starts to count, and then Sawyer comes back and hits this nastier-looking sit-out pile driver. Like, he really, like, kind of struggles to get him up.
You know who, like...
And then just drops him.
Terry Funk, right? He always just, like, kind of just, like, falls back.
Yeah.
Sometimes Mick Foley lifts the guy and then, like, drops. But you could see why it's a banned move. But people in, like, AEW seem to do it just fine. So.
Oh, it's only banned in WWE.
That's right, yeah.
Apart from... Destroyer's fine. But yeah, sit-out pile driver, no.
Looks
no.
And this is, there's more biting, too.
There's more biting from both them. Now they're both bleeding. Sawyer sets Rich against the cage and leaps at him, but Rich moves out the way, so he goes crashing into the cell wall. And this was like a big spot here. Like, this is something we see in all cage matches, all cell matches. But the crowd, like, really reacted to this.
They popped.
Pretty big. Now Rich is coming back by just throwing Sawyer against every side of the cell and throws him once more, one more big throw, head first into the cell, but Tommy Rich collapses as well. So both are on the mat. The ref starts to count, and Rich slowly crawls over, drapes his arm over Buzz Sawyer.
Not this way.
One, two, three, and you just mentioned Mick Foley, but Buzz Sawyer does the Mick Foley very light leg kick just after the three. Oh. It's not like a kick out after three, it's just,
I'm trying.
Which I always love because it looks like you're dead, exhausted and you can't answer the pin. So 12 minutes, 6 seconds, Tommy Rich wins this shark cage match, which means poor Paul Ellering is going to get beaten up by Owens.
Oh, no, not Paul Ellering.
After the match, they actually really sell the brutality of it because Ellering is checking on Sawyer, and
he runs in. Great acting.
He runs in and is trying to like lift him up, and his whole body is just limp.
Yeah.
And then Oli comes in just his shirt. He's wearing what Brock Anderson wore just the other week, isn't he? The polo shirt tucked in. He's like, it's time to beat you up, and just starts punching him in the head and elbowing him.
And then it just becomes like a fight where he's just.
He's just killing.
It's not really a match.
But he's out of the shark cage, so we don't need to talk about that one.
Yeah.
But what did you think? Like, I can't say I've ever seen any of these two guys, but it's always cool seeing something way back like this and have it credited as the predecessor of Hell in a Cell.
It's like the cage gimmick is where you have to escape. So that's always kind of like, well... That's lame. You want to see two people stuck in a cage and fight. When you watch fighting things all around the world, there's always two people stuck in the cage, stuck in the octagon. So the cage and wrestling with the thing on top helps. Obviously, when we get to like Undertaker and stuff where he's throwing people off it, that's where your expectations are going to... Mm. That's why you'll never have as good a Hell in a Cell anymore, because they just will never be... They got to think of something... They're not as violent, even as this. It's just literally two guys like throwing each other around. So... Yeah, it actually was quite entertaining and quite a nice hidden gem in like the world of wrestling, because the predecessor to Hell in a Cell, and these guys are doing the pile drivers. It's 1983. I don't know. There was a pretty good story. I was definitely into it.
It's very basic from a move point of view, but I'm with you. It's two guys locked in a cage fighting, and the selling from both guys. I loved how. And I actually quite liked that the ref was doing the 10 count all the time, because it did kind of sell for me the exhaustion and how physical the match was. As I said, we see people going face first into a cage all the time.
Should there be a cage match where it's if you climb out, you lose. You're leaving.
Well,
that should be.
That's how they do war games in NXT.
Yeah, like if you leave, you're done.
You lose if you escape the cage.
Yeah, that's how it should be. You give up because you're running away. So like that makes more sense.
They only introduce the... Because it always used to be just pinfall or knockout or submission. And they introduce the escape thing later as a way to...
Oh, no, they did it. No, they did it with the biggest cage match is Brett versus Owen. Mm. 5 stars from Meltzer. And it's like the whole gimmick of it was you got to escape. So they keep trying to escape. And, like, that was, like, one of the, like, early times in WWF, obviously, but...
Oh, I'm talking, like, way before that. Like, the cage has been around for...
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
And it always used to be to contain them.
And then you pin.
And they've done it as a way... It's a way of having a cheap win where you can protect the babyface. Like, how many times have we seen the heel just, like, fall out of the door or get dragged out?
Right.
And therefore, your babyface you're trying to protect isn't eating a pin, but they lose the match. And it's... Yeah. It's just, no, a cage should be a blow-off, and I want to see the best person win, and it should be
like
by
this.
Pinfall.
These guys
like
hated
this.
Each other. So
Yeah, it was clear they hated each other. Both looked exhausted and destroyed.
And Paul Ellering in that shark cage.
Poor Paul.
He loves those shark cages, Paul. We'll talk about more about him.
What did you give this match?
Well, if we're rating it out of 5 stars, but I mean, we got to talk about sharks. Are we talking like a 5 stars like the Megalodon, 4 stars a Great White? 3 stars a Hammerhead, 2's a Mako, and then 1's like, what's the shittiest? Like,
I don't know. You've only named 2, I know.
I'm trying to think of what's the like tiniest little sharks that you can get in your thing.
1 star's just a dolphin.
No, we talk about dolphins. They're sketchy. They're more. There's 7 stars in the Pacific.
What about shark teeth instead of stars?
Yeah, 5 shark teeth. Mm. Yeah, sure. Well, I'd say this one's definitely... I mean, it's the first one where the guy's like in the thing. So honestly, like, I was super entertained, and I would say definitely check out this like little piece of wrestling history. Is it a 5-star wrestling match? Like, no, it's not. And wrestling's moved on, but I definitely got into it. So I don't know. Like, I'm in between saying a 3 and like a 4, just because I did think it was cool to see this fan thing. It was quite interesting. Obviously, like, kind of reading a bit of buzz about it gets you more hyped for it, so I definitely had that feeling. But watching it was like, yeah, this is pretty cool. So I'm around that. Like you said, there's a lot of just them beating, punching and stuff too. So it's like there is some good wrestling, but then the story and the whole violence is there.
I went with a 3 as well.
Yeah.
I'm with you. They really sold the violence of it. Just the way it's shot, unfortunately, if this was shot today, you'd get way more... You'd get close-ups of Paul Ellering in that shark cage looking fearful, because he's going to, like, the added stipulation after and you don't really get any of that. Like, you kind of forget he's there once the match starts. So as far as a shark cage match goes, it kind of pulls it back a little bit for me. But yeah, I'd say I'd have probably gone higher in 1983, but for in sure. 2021, it's a 3-star.
Yeah, so it's three teeth.
Shark teeth.
Or what did I say? Hammerhead.
It's a hammerhead match. Yeah. All right, let's go for it. Yeah. Or maybe the teeth are like the point fives.
Yeah, sure.
It's a hammerhead with like no teeth.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
The next shark cage match, we mentioned it off the top. We actually covered in our Clash of the Champions 1 review from last year, which I completely forgot we covered the show.
Yeah, we did a whole Clash of Champions, and we based it around, because we low-key got invested in, we were just talking to Jesse from the Six, friend of the show, who we're going to have on for a show in the near future. We talked about how we did the Ric Flair Steamboat feud, and we were like, holy shit, yeah, still holds up, it's amazing. But then it ends off with the Terry Funk thing, and we were like, all right, we got to do Terry Funk, because Terry Funk's lit. And we watched Terry Funk and Ric Flair, and we're like, holy shit, like, this is great. And then we spiraled off to watch, like, all these other things. So we spiraled off into...
It must have been when WWE were doing Clash of Champions.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We did the first
one. We were like, oh, we watched Ric Flair versus all these other people. Why don't we pick one with him and Sting, the famous one? So we did it. And, well, I mean, we've already talked about it. And if we're talking about giving shark cage matches the reviews, I mean, this one's instantly a Meg because it's got Jason Hervey not in the shark cage.
Unfortunately not. He's a judge.
Yeah. I love this match. I know we've talked about it before.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to go like hold for hold, but because we have go back to our Clash of Champions review to listen to it.
I forgot this was a shark cage match.
Me too. And again, for me, it kind of maybe brings it down a bit. JJ Dillon, who's obviously the Four Horsemen manager and with Ric Flair. We're talking about Ric Flair versus Sting, by the way.
Yeah.
We haven't said that.
Clash of Champions
from 1988. Clash of Champions
1. Oh, yeah.
March 27th,
1988.
So this is one of the TV specials. So it goes to a 45-minute Broadway and therefore goes to the judges' scores and where Ric Flair is voted the winner. I'm pretty sure... Who was the female judge? Patty Mullen, was it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. From Frankenhooker.
Yeah, she's just like, oh, I like that Ric Flair, so he's won the match. But it's such a hot crowd for this. JJ Dillon's in the shark cage. I don't think you get enough of JJ Dillon in the shark cage.
Yeah.
Again, I completely forgot this was a shark cage match, and we covered this less than a year ago.
Right. By default, it's probably literally the best match because it's an awesome match. Then we've talked about
it.
It doesn't fit this gimmick as well as we want it to.
Yeah, and it definitely does the job of keeping JJ Dillon out the match.
Yeah.
But I needed some shots of him up there. I needed some selling.
If you're not giving me a shark,
yeah,
I need to see the shark cage be utilized.
Yeah.
But I do remember liking this match. And I'm pretty sure Jason Hervey did too. So, yeah. I mean, that's what really matters.
I rewatched this one this morning and I kind of had the same criticisms of it from the first time round. It's quite repetitive. It's Ric Flair gets on top. He does something a bit dirty and then Sting no-sells it and powers up and starts beating him up as Flair's cowering away. And then repeat that 10 minutes later, repeat that 10 minutes later. The crowd make this match so exciting, though.
For sure.
They're on top of like every single move either guy does. They're going crazy for it. And I went back to look what I gave it first time round. And I kind of agree. I went 4-star and I'm sticking with that. Meltzer loves this match, 4.75.
Yeah, I'm probably around the same, I think.
4.75?
I think that's what I gave it on our show, or like a 4.5. Because I love all these Ric Flair. I'm a big Ric Flair fan, and I love all his matches. But if you want me to pick, it would go, I love his stuff with Steamboat. I love his stuff with Terry Funk. And then it would be probably Sting underneath that. But still a good match. But yeah, it doesn't have quite the shark cage.
I think the thing is as well with, you watch hour-long matches now, and obviously we got spoiled by that Omega Okada series. There are beats to the match, and like every moment is different. Whereas this one for me just does go back to the well a bit, and I have found that with a few Ric Flair matches.
For sure.
Definitely with the Steamboat ones as well, but it's just how wrestling's evolved over time. yeah, cage match an 8.74. So definitely one of the higher matches we're talking about. But I recommend going back to our archives and listening to our Clash of the Champions 1 review.
Because Jason Hervey and Frankenhooker.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't even listen
to our Frankenhooker review as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah. That was a good one.
Yeah.
So we're going to our next Shark Cage match. Mm.
Oh, same year.
Yeah, is it?
Great American Bash 1988.
Yeah, featuring your favorite wrestling personality of all time.
Oh, yeah, my favorite. Jim Cornette.
Yeah, you love him.
So what sucked is we're going to talk about the Midnight Express with Jim Cornette taking on the Fantastics for the U.S. Tag Team Championship at the Baltimore Arena on the 10th of July, 1988. So just a couple of months after the Flair-Sting match. What sucked is when I looked this up on the network, there are two Great American Bashes from 1988.
Oh.
And one, I believe, is a house show because there's zero commentary. And that was the one I watched first.
Oh.
And it was a bunkhouse stampede match between these two teams for the U.S. title. And I'm waiting. And it's like, all right, so when is Cornette going in the shark cage? Watch the whole match. No shark cage. It was like, have I put the wrong match down? So I watched this match twice. But yeah, Jim Cornette's also wrestling in that match. It's fantastic. So the Fantastics are going into this as the champions. Cornette is going to be locked in the cage. And not only is he going to be locked in a cage, he's going to be strapped into a straitjacket. And
he's livid.
He's livid. He's selling this so well. He's trying to bribe the ref. He's saying, I'll give you $10,000, $15,000. Just don't put me in there. And he's wearing this, like, fancy suit jacket as well. And he's begging them to take care of it because his mom gave him this. Okay, I'm not a Cornette fan at all. He's great here. He's selling this gimmick of the shark cage. He's selling the fact that he's terrified. He's claustrophobic. He doesn't want to be raised above the ring. He wants to be there for his boys, for the U.S. tag team.
Yeah, I've mentioned, like, I'm not super agreeing with Jim Cornette a lot lately. I have enjoyed him on Dark Side of the Ring. I loved him in when he was, like, doing stuff in, what, Ring of Honor, TNA, and WCW and stuff. I thought he was always an annoying character that got over. But yeah, I was liking him getting in the shark. It's not even just in the shark cage. They were like, we don't even trust you, so we're going to put you in a straight jacket. Which scares me more, because I wouldn't want to be suspended. Yeah, you're in the cage and, like, nothing's going to happen, but, like, you're in a straight jacket. You can't do anything.
No.
So, yeah, kind of scary.
I don't want to be in a straight jacket full stop.
No, that just sounds, like, that doesn't sound
hoisted above a ring.
Yeah, no. And then he's chilling in the shark cage for this match, which is probably good, because he's further away from the such glow of all the blonde hair in this match.
Oh, I struggle noting this.
Who is who?
Everyone
in this
is
match.
Bobby Eaton to me.
Everyone's got the blonde flow. Yeah. It's like, what the fuck? How are you supposed to know who anyone is? The tag teams are matching their hair, and then they also have, like, the gear. And it's like, dude.
Yeah.
You're all trying to be Ric Flair.
My notes may be very inaccurate here, because it's just like, Bobby Eaton and Bobby Fulton start things off. We do the leapfrog dropkick sequence, but Fulton actually catches Eaton mid leapfrog with a roll up for a one count. Fulton then is hitting a pair of head scissors, followed by a big right hand. Now, both these teams are definitely, by 1988 standards, very quick. And kind of the US tag title is kind of more for the sort of secondary tag teams, or I see it more as the
wrestlers,
the up-and-comers, like, not so much the heavyweights. Stan Lane then tags in and is hitting a bunch of right hands. Fulton catches him with a baseball slide to the outside. Now Tommy Rogers comes in with a bunch of drop kicks. I think it's Lane goes for a superplex but is knocked off, and Rogers follows up with a second rope cross body.
Yeah, looked tight.
Which looked really nice. For a two count, and Stan Lane is selling this. He's looking a bit shook by this. Fulton then blind tags in, and the Fantastics hit a double backdrop onto Stan Lane. And then there's this fun, like, bit of confusion where Eaton's charging at Lane, and Lane just kind of turns round and thinks it's one of the Fantastics, as you said, blonde hair flowing all round. So hits him with a backdrop and then is like, oh no, that's my own tag partner. And then the Fantastics start to do the strut and wiggle their hips.
The Ric Flair strut.
Ric Flair strut.
They have his hair and his strut.
Oh yeah, love it. Stan Lane then gets back into the match and starts delivering these big right hands, followed by a swinging neck breaker to Rogers.
There was a sweet bulldog, too, where one guy was like holding a guy in a submission, and the other guy like headlocks him and runs. Like, you don't see that anymore, where the guy's like really wrenching him, and then a bulldog could be like...
A proper bulldog.
Yeah, a proper one could hurt someone. Nowadays, it's kind of weak. But...
Lane goes for the pin, but Rogers' foot is on the ropes. Stan Lane has some really nice-looking kicks. I noticed.
Yeah, similar to the Neville one, like the spinning kick to the gut.
Yes. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah.
Yeah, he does that.
Yeah, like this kind of, yeah, lower like super kick.
Which I'm like, all right, didn't expect
Yeah, it looked really nice. Eaton then applies a hammerlock on Rogers as Rogers is just really fighting to get free. Tommy Rogers definitely playing kind of the baby face fighting from beneath because he's been beaten down for quite a while here. He starts fight back with an elbow and a clothesline. Eaton manages to tag in Lane, who comes back in with more of these beautiful-looking kicks to both of the Fantastics. Lane then applies abdominal stretch, and being the heel that he is holding Bobby Eaton's hand for leverage on the outside. Rogers comes back with this sunset flip out of nowhere, but Eaton kicks out. We then get a, like... Matt Hardy-esque top rope leg drop.
It was.
And sells his back and his ass immediately.
That move's got to hurt your butt.
Oh, surely.
Yeah.
I used to do the long jump at school.
Yeah.
And I would always just land on my ass.
And it would hurt.
It would hurt.
Tailbone.
The Midnight Express then hit their assisted splash, kind of like, I don't know. Enzo and Cass used to
do. I guess, yeah.
I can't remember what they call it.
Yeah.
But Rogers actually gets his knees up. This is when the timekeeper announces 15 minutes has passed, and Rogers finally manages to make the tag to Bobby Fulton. Fulton does this similar to the spot we saw with the referee Sharma on NXT, where he's doing the leapfrog, but the ref gets in the way, so the ref drops down as well.
I thought you were going to say he was a zombie. Also.
No. And then Rogers accidentally takes out the ref with this kind of flying clothesline, and now Bobby Eaton wraps a chain around his fist, nails him with the chain, and then puts the chain like in
his trunks.
In his trunks.
In his balls.
1, 2, 3. 16 minutes, 23 seconds. The Midnight Express win the U.S. tag team titles. After the match, the Fantastics are complaining that they used a chain. So the ref is checking both Eaton and Lane, and they're like, no, he's got nothing there.
Yeah.
And then they realize they hid it in the Fantastics gear, so it looks like they had it the whole time.
Damn.
I thought this was a pretty fun match.
Well, after, I mean, Cornette gets lowered, and then he gets, like...
Oh, they give him 10 lashes.
Yeah, they beat
which
him
Which I think was a stipulation to the match.
Like, regardless, you just...
Regardless. No, it was if the Fantastics win, he gets 10 lashes. But they were cheated anyway, so they like, we're going to whip you.
Yeah, okay, that made sense. So
which
that was
might explain the straitjacket.
Right, okay. Well,
might be, like, a little bit of padding there.
Right, true. Yeah, that's true. It didn't look like it hurt that much.
Mm.
They tried to get it off him. Overall, like, yeah, the match was pretty good. There was a lot of moves, like, super ahead of their time. This is, what, 1988?
Mm.
You said top rope leg drop. There was some pretty cool sidekicks. Like, some stuff that probably a lot of the other people on this show probably weren't doing. Because I know this was after this, they set up for the Tower of Doom match, which is, like, Road Warriors, Steve Williams, all these people. And it's like, yeah, like, some of those guys are good, but they're more so, like, the bigger, like... Steve Williams is lit, actually, but like these guys seem like you're right. Like in today's world, like not so much your cruiserweights or something, but just like the workhorses that actually do like wrestling stuff.
I kind of feel AEW should have secondary tag titles,
yeah,
like the TNT Tag Championship, so you can have like your
the TBS
top, your
tag
top
titles.
Flight, yeah, the TBS tag titles. Have your top flights, your acclaimed, that kind of level. Who realistically. They're not going to be the tag champions. They're
right.
not going to defeat the likes of the Bucks and FTR and those kind of things. But it gives them something to like fight for. It's stuff that can be defended on Dark, on Rampage, those kind of shows.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be a pretty good idea because they've got so many tag teams in AEW right now.
Yeah, I thought this was pretty fun. I'd give it kind of similar to like the last one. I thought it had more action though. Maybe I actually did like. I thought the last one had less wrestling, but more of like.
Which one?
Not Sting and thing, but
the Buzz Sawyer.
Yeah, like this one was just a good wrestling match with Jim Cornette chilling in a thing. So I'm gonna go like 3 stars. I'm gonna go Hammerhead on this one.
I still liked it.
I
went a Hammerhead with three teeth here. I went 3.75. I thought the match was really entertaining. It was a really nice pace. I think of the matches we've seen so far, Cornette sold the gimmick of the shark cage.
Yes.
Really well. You wanted to see him get his ass kicked at the end and whipped. I think Stan Lane's kicks, like that was something that stood out to me, definitely. I really enjoyed this one. Meltzer gave it a 4-star.
Great White.
He went Great White. And Cage Match gave it a 7.60.
Okay. Mm. Yeah. Interesting.
We go to Clash of the Champions 20. The day before my third birthday.
Is this 1992?
This is September 2nd, 1992, from the Center Stage Theater in Atlanta, Georgia. It's Ricky the Dragon Steamboat versus Steve Austin with Paul E. Dangerously in a shark cage, and it's for the television title.
Oh boy. Recently, we have a little group chat with some friends, and someone brought up Ricky the Dragon Steamboat's WCW theme. Well, here he comes out to it. Wow. Underrated banger. Mm. It's totally trying to be like a Rocky song or something, but it's amazing. And I was like vibing to it here. And Steve Austin's this like young blue chipper.
Blonde.
Yeah, wow. But very technically sound, I thought. Yeah. Cool. This was pretty cool. And then Mark Miro.
Yep.
He's just there. Yep. Love Johnny B. Bad.
Johnny B. Bad.
Mark Miro. Who's recently been doing backflips at his cottage. He's like, he's living life.
Nice.
He smiles.
Mark Miro. I like Mark Miro.
Yeah.
He accompanies this 11-year-old who comes to the ring and butchers the national anthem.
Oh, yeah, that was not good. Yeah, sorry. At this point, I was rolling a joint, and I was like, wait, what's going on over there?
Yeah, bless her.
Someone's strangling the shark tonight.
Do you remember when AEW haven't had anyone sing the national anthem?
They had downstage shit to bed, dude.
No, do you remember they had, like, that family? They had like a mom and dad and two daughters just murder the national anthem,
weird.
And they've never done it since. It was one of their first pay-per-views, Double or Nothing.
They
or
learned
something
their
like that.
They
it
learned their
horrible,
lesson.
Horrible.
Downstate.
Yeah, they got them from the same place. They got their explosions, I think. I've got in my notes. Okay, she gets a bit better when she gets a bit sassy with it.
Oh, America! Yeah. And the Rockets. I would have preferred seeing Mark Miro do it.
Yeah. Or Paul.
Together.
So
he'll be like, hey, Paul, how's, you know, my friend. Well, 1992, Paul Heyman's here.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Miro's here. And Paul is like, just you wait, Mark Miro. One of my friends is probably 6 years old or some shit. It's going to ruin your life.
Yeah. Yeah. And you'll be okay about it. Oh, bless him. What a guy.
Yeah, we love him.
Paulie Dangerously.
That's right.
Let's be on brand here.
Yeah.
Is physically forced into the cage. He really doesn't want to be in there.
He's got his phone,
He's got his phone. He can always phone for help.
So you're fine. You could call people.
Yeah. Steve Austin here wearing black with, like, these red stripes on the front of his trunks with white boots. Bit of a different look for Austin.
Well,
here.
He also has hair.
He has his blonde hair as well. Dragon's ribs are all taped up, so he's selling the ribs going into this match.
But he's always looking good too, Ricky the Dragon.
Yeah, he just still looks good today.
Yeah, he always looks good, to be honest, Ricky. He's someone you appreciate when you watch his wrestling.
Oh, yeah. The match starts when you get these great-looking chops from Ricky, followed by these headlock takedowns. And, like, Steamboat is something So like you said about the Bulldog in the last match, like a headlock takedown is such a basic thing we see all the time here, but they're so tight and snug when he does them. Like it does look like it would hurt. Austin manages to break free from these headlocks and drops an elbow. Dragon is then yelling up to Paul in the rafters there, going, "I'm better, Paulie! I'm better!" Dragon goes for the headlock again, but Austin now pulls his hair to get out of it. Austin goes for what looks like this kind of belly-to-belly suplex off the second rope, but just launches Dragon, like, face-first to the mat.
Yeah.
So his chest, his stomach, his ribs go crashing to the floor.
Yeah, Steve Austin shows he's pretty technically sound. He's actually pretty fast here.
He's really, yeah. Definitely. There are then these rib, like, side backbreakers from Austin.
Oh, huge. Reminded me of AJ Styles, Kenny Omega. They both do, like, huge high-angle backbreakers. Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, Austin's, like kind of killing it here, yeah.
Austin keeps on going for pin attempts, but is getting frustrated as Dragon keeps kicking out. And the crowd start getting behind Steamboat, chanting, "Ooh, Steamboat, Steamboat." We get this great-looking clothesline from Austin, and now he's ripped the rib tape off and applies this abdominal stretch. And as he's doing it, he's digging the elbow into the ribs. He's clawing with his fingers. Looks really painful. Austin then charges at Ricky, but gets countered and thrown back to the mat. Dragon is now firing up with these chops. He hits crossbody off the second rope, but Austin rolls it through with a pin attempt for a two count. Austin then goes for a drop kick of his own, but gets blocked and then catapulted into the turnbuckle for a two count from Dragon. Austin then attempts the dirty pin by putting his feet on the ropes. And then Ricky goes for a tombstone pile driver. I was like, what's going on?
Yeah, one of his signature moves.
Austin counters it into a tombstone of his own, but Ricky then, like, reverses that once again and hits the tombstone.
Looked nice.
Looked really nice.
Looked sick.
But Austin kicked out of a tombstone in 1992.
That's right, ahead of his time.
Yeah. Dragon is then sent face first into the turnbuckle, and Austin uses the tights for a two count. Dragon then knocks Austin off the turnbuckle, goes for a double axe handle, my least favorite move in wrestling, but gets struck in the ribs. Steamboat then skins the cat, but Austin follows up with this stiff back elbow, and then Dragon falls to the outside, crawls under the ring, comes out the other side, climbs to the top, and hits a top rope crossbody.
Just like tricking him, essentially.
Yeah, scoring the pinfall in 10 minutes 43 seconds.
Damn, yeah. Stone Cold, Steve Austin looks pretty fast and young and a totally different character than what we're used to. But Steamboat's still Steamboat, so there was some pretty cool chemistry in, like, the countering and the back and forth. I kind of got into it. It didn't have much interaction with the shark cage in this one, really. So it really could have just been there was no need for this gimmick at all, but they did it.
I kind of feel unless you're going to do... Like, unless you're going to do like Cornette was doing. And Paulie was, like, selling it, getting into the cage. But unless you're either going to have shenanigans or, like, over-the-top selling, just do the manager's bard from ringside. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. But it's still, the wrestling was definitely here for these two. And the tombstone was crazy. I'd say, again, probably, like, a three here. Because I liked it, but it didn't necessarily get up to, like, anything that really blew me away, but it was definitely interesting to see Steve Austin and Ricky in 1992. So
I loved the pace of this match for like a 1992 match. It was pretty quick, and I always like watching Austin kind of pre Stone Cold because it's so different from how I remember Austin. And as you kept mentioning, he's so technically sound, and obviously the injuries, he really changed his style and became brawler. But here he's doing drop kicks and like chain wrestling with Ricky and stuff. I went at 3.5. I enjoyed it. I'm with you. I could have done with some more Paul Lee.
Always more Paul Lee. He had his phone. He should have called someone.
Yeah, cool. He for help.
The what was his team?
Dangerous Alliance.
He had this. Well, yeah, but he had the who did he have in WCW? The Samoan. Who was it? The Hit Squad or something? Okay. Who did he have in? Yeah, something like that. He could have been calling them. That could have been part of it.
This was Dangerous Alliance, though.
Was it? Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, that's why he's with Austin.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. So, like, yeah. I was just... It would have been a funny shot if he was like, yo, because they did
come
have...
Come help.
Yeah, it's just funny.
Get the controller for this thing. Meltzer gave this a 3.25, so he's in between us two. Cage Match have it at a 6.88.
Nice.
Let's change territories here, shall we?
That's right. Let's go to New York.
Let's go to the WWF. Actually, we're going to go to the Greensboro Coliseum in North Carolina.
Again? Oh, wait. Is this the same place from earlier? No.
It is, yeah. We're in Greensboro a lot on the show. April 26th, 98, for the WWF European Championship.
The most important title.
The most important title.
In WWF history.
Owen Hart versus Triple H with China locked in a shark cage.
Oh, yeah. This is great. This is the first Unforgiven. 1998.
Wasn't there one year before?
I searched it on the. I watched this on the network, and this was the first one they showed me. So I mean, I think so. But this I didn't even remember. I don't even know if I've ever seen this match. I probably have.
Right, this is the first one.
I probably have because I've watched all like things. So clearly, Vince was a big fan of the movie Unforgiven from 1992, and wanted a pay per view named right after it. So they did that, and the poster's great with Undertaker.
Oh yeah.
But this is great. It's a shark cage match where they're like, yo, we don't trust China to bar her from ringside because she'll show up. So we need to have her in a spot where we can see her in a shark cage.
Yeah. She was even at WrestleMania, these two had a match, and she was handcuffed to Commissioner Slaughter at the time. And at that point, she threw powder in his eyes and distracted Owen, low-blowing him even. Allowing Triple H to have the match. So obviously, being handcuffed to Slaughter didn't do anything.
Right. So you need to put her in a shark cage.
You need to put her in a shark cage,
That's what they're going to do here. She sells it great. She's like, what? And like they don't want to do it. They're like kind of not agreeing. And then finally she's like, yeah, all right. But she keeps teasing the bars. Like, huh, I wonder if I could...
Bend these.
Break out of these bars.
This is also... obviously, WrestleMania was Shawn's last match at the time against Austin. So Triple H has just taken over DX just 30 days ago and introduced X-Pac and the New Age Outlaws. So this is kind of his first pay-per-view in the leader of DX.
Got you.
Someone in the crowd ahead of his time had a sign saying, Playboy needs China.
When did she join? When did she do Playboy?
She did Playboy in 2000, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. We have it. So, we had it on our set. Where is it?
At the Foresight. Oh, yeah. it's in storage right now.
Wow. We got our China Playboy.
Got our China Playboy back out.
Yeah, we got you. Fucking love China.
So Triple H is kissing China goodbye as she's in the cage. But Owen attacks him from behind and is throwing him around the ramp, throwing him into the cage. Triple H... at one point is kind of disorientated and just throws a punch at absolutely nothing, which is kind of fun. He's thrown against the cage once again, and then Owen hits a vertical suplex on the floor before going, suck it, and telling China also to suck it.
Nugget.
The bell rings, and China starts to be raised, suspended. She's not above the ring, but like above the rampway. Owen ducks two clotheslines early, but then eats a high knee from Triple H. It's all Hunter at the beginning of the match as he's stomping down on Owen in the corner. He hits the Ric Flair-esque knee across the face to Owen. Triple H goes for a few pin attempts and then sends Owen sternum first into the turnbuckle like his brother Brett often takes. China, who's suspended in this shark cage above the ring, now pulls out a file out of her pants and drops it into the ring.
Oh.
I thought she was going to try and, like, file the bars,
lock?
Right?
I don't know if that would work.
Okay. But that's, like, the old school, like, breaking out prison. Have a file. Triple H keeps on going for this, like, reverse cravat submission.
Dude, he's doing a dragon sleeper. He did it once. He had him in this hold. It's a dragon sleeper, and then Owen gets out of it. They go counter for counter, and then he tries to do it again, but it's then to reveal he's doing like the inverted suplex.
Yeah.
It's like where you have the guy in the dragon sleeper and lift. So I was like, yo, why does Triple H keep doing a dragon sleeper?
I didn't think he applied it well.
Well, he didn't. It looked like he was just trying to lift him.
The problem was, for me, like, you can normally, when you see like a Dragon Sleeper, like at least the person applying it has their face up and is selling the move. Whereas his like face is buried in Owen's chest.
Right.
You can't see Owen's face because he's got the arm around it. So it just kind of looks shit because neither guy is able to sell the pain or the struggle applying this move.
Submission expert, Triple H.
He should keep to the death lock. I like a Triple H death lock.
The figure four.
Or the figure four, yeah. So China is now attempting to bend the bars of this shark cage.
Yeah, great, great shot. Well, when Triple H eventually goes for that inverted thing, Owen counters for this German, which was fantastic, and Triple H sold it great. And this is where China's like opening up the bars and everyone's freaking out. So Owen's kind of distracted, but he still manages to then hit another like belly to belly or something.
Yeah, he hits these really nice suplexes. Yeah. There's like a belly to belly, hits an enziguri, a running heel kick, a sit out pile driver.
Hell yeah.
pre being banned.
Yeah.
And then a top rope elbow. But now China has got out of the cage.
But it's still 20 feet
in the
air.
Yeah, I don't know what she's thinking. Because now she's like, she's hanging onto this cage.
Yeah.
Which, as you said, probably like 20 feet up.
She's trying to get down, but she's hanging.
She's hanging. And then she's like, oh, I'm pretty high here. So like climbs back up. So now she's like upside down, holding onto the bars with like her feet on the bars. And I'm like, what are you attempting here? There's no padding underneath this. So real trust in her own strength here, being able to hold up her own weight.
Really, really. I was actually
an awesome visual, though.
I was going to say, the shot of her hanging is actually pretty awesome. Because, she's got to be a beast to lift herself back up. And she does, but wow.
Triple H's leg then gets caught up in the ropes as China is still just hanging here.
Dangling.
Owen hits a DDT followed by the sharpshooter. And now new DX member Road Dogg comes out and starts to lower the cage. So Sergeant Slaughter runs out with Tim White as they're trying to get rid of China. Owen manages to counter a pedigree into a catapult, followed by a pedigree of his own. Owen Hart hits a pedigree when X-Pac runs out with a fire extinguisher, causing Triple H to win in 12 minutes, 38 seconds. And Owen is pissed. After the match, he goes, enough is enough, and this bullshit has to stop.
That's right.
So the shark cage didn't prevent Triple H from going over here.
Damn.
What were your thoughts of this?
This was hella entertaining. Like, Triple H gets his flack, but he definitely had a great run, especially in the 90s, 2000s. And Owen Hart is just a fantastic wrestler and a fantastic actor, I think, in the world of wrestling. And China with the... Didn't make sense. What does she think she's going to attempt here to get... She almost was like, all right, if I can just slowly, maybe I can get my foot on the... It's like, no, you can't get out. You're not getting out. You're going to die if you fall. Like, what are you doing? And I thought, though, the shots where she's like swinging around and it's like distracting Owen and then he gets beat up and all these distractions. Like, wrestling's been doing this for years. Like, it's been a thing. But I can't say that, like, I wasn't entertained because I thought the three main key parts was Triple H, Owen, and China, and They were pretty on point. I was really into it. I was into a lot of the moves. Even the suplexes from Owen were on point, and Triple H is bigger, so he's taking these bumps and it looked great. And it had a lot of shark interaction. And that's what I was looking for here. The shark cage interaction was at the peak because she's out of it and swinging and dangling and it looks dangerous.
I wonder how much she was meant to just drop and then was like, oh no, this is too high. So they got Road Dogg out there. Because you could have still done China drops down, Tim White and Slaughter run out to get her out, and then X-Pac comes in. So I wonder if they thought
it wouldn't be
as high as that. Oh no, for sure.
Yeah.
But like a foot lower, she'd have been able to drop okay.
No, I don't think so.
No?
No, 20 feet in the air?
No, but your feet aren't that. Think you're then dangling. China's probably near 6 foot.
6 foot something
as
probably,
well.
Yeah. But still, if it was in the ring, sure. But if I don't know. That sounds tough. But the visual was great. I really enjoyed this. I'd give this, out of all of them I watched, like, this one had some of the craziest stuff to do with an actual shark cage.
Yeah.
And that's all to China. Because she was the one who's got to hang on, literally hang on there. I can't do that. No way. I love this. I'm a big Owen fan, too. I would give this a great white.
What's that?
A four star.
Four. Wow. Yeah.
That's right.
I agree with you about the shark cage stuff. I need a bit of nonsense and shenanigans with my shark cage.
It's only missing a shark.
But I felt kind of the flow of the match was... I didn't feel that flow was there. And I think maybe because of the stuff with the cage. I also didn't feel the crowd were really into this at all. They were very quiet for the actual wrestling.
When China spot happened, they
China spot it, yeah. They did. But they were sitting on their hands for most of this. I didn't actually really... like the match, but I agree. I had fun with the shark stuff. I went a 2.5 for this. So what is
a Mako shark?
Mako shark
and a few teeth.
Two teeth.
A few tiger sharks.
I did like. I like this Xbox fit here. The
what was it?
Adidas tracksuit with the classic DXT.
Nice.
And the red headband.
Is that what you're gonna rock?
Bandana. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe.
This summer.
Maybe more of a fall. Autumn thing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Meltzer gave this a 2.75.
Anything on Cage Match?
No, I couldn't find a score on Cage Match for this one.
It's just unforgiven.
It's just
unforgivable. It was fun, and it was cool to see some people that are wrestlers that are no longer with us in Owen and China, and to kind of see some stuff that I wasn't super aware of and have not watched in quite a long time.
There was, I didn't put it on the list, but I did just watch this morning when I had some time before work, Mankind versus The Undertaker from Survivor Series 1996.
Right.
In Madison Square Garden, with obviously Paul Bearer being Mankind's manager in the shark cage. And this came after Undertaker had been buried alive. So he came back, debuted the new like teardrop tattoo right. on his face.
That means he killed someone.
Hopefully
not a shark.
Flying down to the ring with his big cape.
Yeah.
But this was kind of Undertaker debuting a bit more of a different wrestling side. And it was really interesting to watch because in this whole match, he's doing kind of the Pete Dunne working the fingers because he's trying to get Mankind to like, he's trying to disable their hand,
the
mandible claw. And actually it was, I didn't put it on the list because it only got a 2.25 from Meltzer, but I actually found this one a lot more enjoyable than the Owen Triple H one. And I mean, Mankind Undertaker always had pretty good chemistry, but definitely watching Undertaker then adopt this submission style and pre kind of him getting into MMA and becoming like the shooter
right.
taker. It was quite interesting to watch. So I recommend maybe going and watching that one. If you need some more shark cages in your life.
I mean, that poor Paul Bearer, he was put in a shark cage. He was then put in, like, what, a cement...
mixer.
What was that thing? Yeah, that wasn't quite a shark cage.
No.
So. Wow.
I'm sure he was buried alive or set on fire as well, probably.
He was a hologram?
Yeah, he was. He was a hologram.
Bless him.
Yeah. Well, let's go to our neck of the woods.
Yes.
A show we were both at.
This is true.
But we didn't know each other.
No.
We're in the same building.
We were just strangers in a room.
And we're talking about the Air Canada Centre.
That's right. Not the Scotiabank.
Not the Scotiabank.
It wasn't that yet.
TakeOver Toronto 2016. And it's the Dusty Classic Final. AOP, Authors of Pain, taking on TM61 with Paul Ellering once again. All those years later, locked in a cage and suspended above the ring. This is the second Dusty Classic tournament we've had. Samoa Joe and Finn Balor winning the first one. TM61 having quite an impressive route to the final here, having beaten Tino Sabatelli and Riddick Moss, Austin Aries with Roderick Strong. Remember that? That was a thing.
That's weird.
And Sanity.
Nice.
And I'm pretty sure AOP just ate up everyone to get to
they're
the final.
Undefeated.
We get the ominous cell music as the cage
it's like Jaws
is coming down. It is.
Dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun, dun.
Slapjack.
Slapjack, Shane Thorne.
You know, TM61 is a Pokemon?
It is. Will of well,
yeah, Will of the Wisp. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
classic up next there.
This guy eventually leaves, right? Nick Miller?
Nick Miller is in New Japan.
Right, that's right. Now. Yeah.
And Shane Thorne, I haven't seen him for a long time.
Slapjack.
Who? Apparently he's dropping the name. Yep. Hopefully not the mask. I love the mask.
Paper plate?
Got to sell that merch.
That Shane. Paper plate. Did they sell that?
Why not? No, I don't think so. They should have.
It's a paper plate.
That's what I want to wear for my first wrestling trip.
A paper plate?
Slapjack paper plate on my face. Yeah. Akam charges at Miller like immediately, and Miller hits this pretty nice snug-looking forearm before tagging in Shane Thorne. We get a double drop kick from TM61 to Razor, sending both authors of pain to the outside. Miller follows up with this huge suicide dive, which looked really nice. It wasn't a push one. He definitely went flying here.
Elbow, forearm, yeah.
Razor then gets Thorne up on his shoulders, and I don't really know what Razor was trying here.
He looks like he's going to try to electric chair drop him off of it.
Off the scaffold.
He keeps climbing higher as he's trying to fight off his shoulders. So he's got him an electric chair.
So we've got, this scaffolding at ringside, similar to what we've got in the CWC right now that we've seen people jump off of. And that is what is supporting the shark cage hanging above the ring. So Razor is trying to, climb with Thorne on his shoulders here. But Thorne kicks him off and hits this, swan dive senton off the scaffold.
Insane.
Onto AOP. Really wakes the crowd up. Holy shit, chance.
Yeah, this definitely got... I remember being there. This was kind of like, it's a cool match in the history of the shark cage, but, why is this, takeover? Mm. And then this spot happens, and everyone's like, all right, this is fucking nuts. And this spot still holds up. I don't think I've watched this match back.
No, I haven't.
The spot off this is pretty fucking nuts. How do you not push this guy? This is Elix Skipper TNA. He does the crazy move off the cage thing. You're like, how do you not push this guy? He's sick.
Well, you then have the Revival and DIY just coming out and being like, you want to see another tag
this
match?
This is fair.
And no one remembers this match afterwards.
This is very true. Very true.
But there's holy shit chance. The crowd really get into this spot.
This shows me that Shane Thorne should have been more than just Slapjack.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Razor then does this pretty cool. It's a classic leg sweep as Thorne's on the apron, but the way Thorne sells this, he turns inside out, pretty much lands head first on the apron here.
He sells it though. He blocks it really good. It's a Kota Ibushi spot.
Mm.
Totally what he's doing. We haven't really talked about AOP in a long time because they've been on. Are they in WWE anymore?
No, both released.
Yeah, a long time ago. I feel right. Not big fans. And you could, watching this back, I'm going to say that it's totally TM61 doing all the heavy lifting, doing everything that is good in this match. And then it's it's literally them doing all the selling if they're getting beaten up. And then all the moves that they're doing is them doing, they're doing some crazy stuff. It's pretty fun.
Ellering is now in the cage, just yelling down instructions, and Akam is just looking up there what do I need to do? Oh, powerbomb, all right. We then get this long headlock from Akam, I think.
Because it's all he can do.
And it's come on. Akam then charges the corner, but Thorne is able to get out the ring and tag in Nick Miller. Miller hits a body slam on, I think it's Akam. Followed by a couple of suplexes.
Exploders.
So impressive for Nick Miller's not huge.
Yeah.
And AOP are pretty big guys. And what I like is each time he's doing it, he's kind of selling the lower back. There's then this running flying forearm from Miller, kind of as AOP are sort of down on the floor. He's run kind of sliding Ds, but diving.
Love a good sliding D.
Looks really good. We then get a moonsault to Razor, but he kicks out.
Kurt Angle's moonsault.
Yeah, it looked really nice. And then the Thunder Valley from TM61. How do you... It's like the...
You both military press someone, and then someone, you sit out with them, so you get they get dropped, but, kind of because you're lifting them up in the air. I don't know. It looks cool.
We then get a plancha from Miller, a slingshot sent onto the outside from Thorne, and then that dastardly Paul Ellering drops a chain down from the cage to the ring. Razor tries to use it, but Thorne blocks it, and this thing goes flying into the crowd.
I've done some research to see who got hit by this chain. Apparently it hit some people and they were like, it didn't hurt that much.
Okay.
But how?
This reminded me, I did A Clockwork Orange for one of my exams at school.
Right.
The play, one of our performance exams. And we started off with this big fight, with the Droogs. My weapon was nunchucks. And because it was sweaty, because the stage lights and stuff, these nunchucks flew right out my hand, flew past the examiner's face, and hit this girl in the audience.
Oh my god!
Just bloodied her.
Oh my god!
Yeah, I still got an A plus.
Wow. Well, I had blood.
Yeah.
You gotta do.
You
color.
Gotta add color.
You gotta do color. Yeah. Better be careful though. If you have color too close to a shark cage, it's gonna attract a shark.
Yeah. No, sharks like that blood. Thorn, after this chain spot, tries a roll up, but it's kicked out. And then Razor hits a pretty cool looking one handed spine buster, followed by the last chapter. And in 8 minutes 20 seconds, AOP win.
They're the Dusty Cup champions of 2016.
Yeah.
Yeah. Overall, like I kind of said, it's like it's TM61 doing all the cool stuff. There's a headlock from AOP. There's some power moves at the end, and then they hit their, what is it, the
last chapter.
But it's the side Russian leg sweep.
Yep.
With the clothesline.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like their other move, the collider, the power bomb.
The power bomb one.
Yeah, wasn't that more vicious when you smack two guys at the backs and then power bomb them? I always thought, I was like, well, why would you side Russian leg sweep?
They kind of use both, but the last chapter was more their finish.
I have not watched this back, and I still feel the same way I felt about it when it happened live, and I was like, hey, that didn't need to be that fun, and it kind of was, it kind of banged. But shout out Nick Miller, shout out Shane Thorne.
Yeah, I'm more familiar with Shane Thorne because he kind of stuck around a bit and had that little singles run in NXT. Nick Miller really impressed me here
for sure.
As well. He looked really good here. I'm not as negative with you as with AOP. They're definitely green, but I saw kind of the potential in them. This is NXT, and this is still, like, especially 2016, more of a developmental brand than it is now. And I think is it Razor? Is he the actual
MMA
fighter?
Yeah, one of them's like a killer. Watched him fight.
Razor definitely in this match was the one impressing me more. I don't know why that headlock was there from Akam. Like, this is an 8-minute match on a takeover.
Yeah.
Why are you
headlocks?
Why are you slowing this down? But I did think, I always thought they play quite a nice base for your, like, lighter teams. And honestly, like, I did think they improved with their tag reign in NXT. I don't know how, like, these guys are made for the main roster.
Yeah.
Like, it baffles me how these two huge, scary looking dudes, one of them is a legit fighter, both, they're not slow. They're not lumbering big guys. They've both got some athleticism to them.
Yeah.
And over time, should improve doing, like, house show circuits and that kind of thing. I don't understand why WWE dropped the ball with them so early. I'm not saying these are phenomenal, like, wrestlers, but there's a place for a big tag team.
Yeah, well, if you want to say how did they drop the ball, I was like, because they did what they've been doing lately. Pull these people before they actually know how to wrestle.
Yeah.
Before you actually know how to work. These guys can't work. Like, you watch them 4 years later or whatever. I don't even remember when they got released. But, like, I tried.
Oh,
I watched,
just a few months
ago. Yeah, and I watched them. I'm like, well, they still suck. Mm. So, yeah, it was kind of the same with Braun for me. I'm like, Braun, this guy's huge when they signed this guy. I'm like, this guy's NXT? Crazy. He was in NXT for so long and then shows up on TV on NXT for, like, 2 seconds. And then it's like, did he not even show up on TV?
I don't think he wrestled on NXT.
I don't even think he showed up on TV.
I just remember him as Adam Rose's...
Yeah, like, Rose Bunny or whatever. Yeah. Because he even saw him. He's like, yeah, this guy's got to be on thing. And it's like, he didn't even learn how to do shit. So it's like, yeah, it shows for these guys. But this still was a pretty cool match. That spot definitely stands out.
Both teams were a missed opportunity.
Yeah, 100% TM61.
TM61, maybe
the Mighty
it was
will
just,
kneel, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, was it
our man kneel? The Mighty won't kneel?
I think it was bad timing with them because they did have.
Yeah.
Was it Thorn who was injured?
Yeah, someone got hurt.
And like you had DIY and Revival killing it around this time. They were lower down on the card when American Alpha were having their thing. I think it was just kind of bad timing for them. Shane Thorne, I hope now, like the word on the street is they're kind of dropping the
Slapjack.
Reckoning name for Mia Yim and the Slapjack character for Shane Thorne. I hope we see someone else. Maybe just go back to NXT. I don't know, because both these guys are really good. I did think that dive should have come later. It felt very early on.
I guess to get your attention.
It kind of peaked early and didn't really hit that point again.
Yeah.
And the chain didn't lead to the finish. Was that just a mistake?
It could have
been. It looks like Thorne blocks it, but I feel like he should have maybe punched with it instead of.
I wasn't sure if it was supposed to be, because he sells it like he did block it. So
he sells it like he blocks it. It looks like he goes to block it, but then the finish doesn't really involve the chain at all.
It's like they think the last chapter is flashy move, but it's just not. Yeah.
I went. What was a three?
Hammerhead.
Hammerhead. That's what I gave this. A hammerhead, no teeth.
I'll give a hammerhead and some teeth, just because that dive like is pretty cool. And they don't show that enough in like highlight. I guess they don't want to show Shane Thorne, but it's like sick spot.
Yeah,
really.
It is a cool moment.
And Ellering in a cage.
Yeah, how was Ellering's cage?
I liked
thing?
Him in a cage.
Me too.
He's all black. I used to hate this guy.
I know.
And he did his job. He was hateable, and he drops. Of course, he drops something down through the shark cage. Yeah. What a cheeky guy.
I liked his kind of yelling instructions as well, like still managing while he's up there. And Soldi looked a little scared going up there.
Yeah.
Meltzer also gave this a hammerhead, a 3-star.
Nice.
Cage match, it's a 6.25.
Interesting.
And that leads us to our final shark cage match, which came just a few months after this one. They wanted to make the most of that investment they made.
In that shark cage.
And push the toy.
Yeah.
It's the Royal Rumble, 29th of January, 2017.
Do you remember the Alamo?
Do you remember the Alamo? It's the Alamo Dome, Universal Championship, Kevin Owens defending the title against Roman Reigns, and Jericho, who's the US champion, obviously Kevin Owens' best friend at this time, is put in the cage.
Oh, what?
This whole, like, Owens-Jericho partnership story, it was great.
Yeah.
I loved it. I loved their chemistry. We're going to have Jericho in. What's so impressive of this one is the size of the Alamo Dome. So when you see Jericho suspended up there, even though he's probably the same height as
20 feet or
you would be in any of the other matches, but being in a dome, it looks so much cooler as
so
well.
So he's above the ring. So therefore it's like he's 20 feet in the air still, but it's 13 feet from the ring. Because the ring's like higher than it is, but wow! So he doesn't want they have a plan that as soon as they're going to try to put Jericho in the cage, they're going to quickly beat up Roman Reigns to get the advantage, but it kind of backfires.
Roman immediately like starts fighting back. He's throwing them both into the shark cage, and then locks Jericho in there, and the cage starts to.
And he's like beat up and he's like, no, what's going on? No.
Jericho's terrified.
His scarf.
He definitely watched Cornette.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. Going in this cage here. So they start brawling. It's a no DQ match, even though Jericho's not allowed to be involved. So they're brawling through the crowd. Roman starts picking up, like, you know, the barricades, like the string pull out ones?
Yeah.
The like metal post. He starts hitting Kevin Owens with that. They're now on top of they're like using the like lid of the announce table, smashing each other with that. And then Owens brings out a load of steel chairs.
He loves them.
And stacks them up, creating this tower of chairs at ringside. He hits his cannonball against the barricade to Roman. And then hits the frog splash off the turnbuckle, through a table, on the floor.
This looked nuts.
Great spot. And then he picks up a steel chair and looks up at Jericho, yelling, Chris, this is for you! As he smashes Roman across the back with the chair.
You can hear Jericho, like, yapping away.
Oh, the whole match, he's just screaming. And you know his, like, shrill, there's a chair set up in the corner turnbuckle. Roman runs into a super kick from Owens and then is sent headfirst into this chair. And then Jericho, from all up in the air,
Kevin
drops down a pair of brass knuckles.
He does it great. He holds against this dome arena. He holds it out and goes, Kevin, and makes sure all of a sudden everyone realizes he's doing it. Yeah.
Kevin Owens then hits, like, does with the Brass Knucks the Roman Reigns Superman punch pose, putting his fist on the ground, but Roman evades the Superman punch. He's then trying to pull the Knucks off of Kevin Owens' fist, but gets raked in the eyes, and then Owens hits the Superman punch, but only a two count. Roman then picks up Owens and hits a Samoan drop through a chair.
This was sick. It's like a standing sit-up chair, yeah.
And then there's a roll-up for two from Owens, but Roman escapes. There's then a Superman punch from Roman for a two count. And then Owens hits, and this is pre-babyface Owens. He hits the Stone Cold Stunner.
Right.
This is before this was like a regular thing.
Yeah.
And looked a pretty nice stunner here, I thought. But Roman kicks out. Owens then is climbing the turnbuckle, but gets Superman punched off the turnbuckle, and he goes crashing through the tower of chairs.
Ouch.
At ringside. This looked so painful. Then Roman clears the announce table, and even in 2017, I was surprised they still had the old school monitors, not the iPads that they use now. He powerbombs Owens through the announce table, rolls him into the ring when, well, you just mentioned him a few minutes ago. Braun Strowman runs out. I'm not finished with you.
Yeah.
Hits a choke slam onto the announce table. I am the table. Doesn't break. And then a running power slam through a table in the corner of the ring. And Owens crawls over, drags himself onto Roman. And 1, 2, 3. Owens retains the Universal Championship in 22 minutes, 55 seconds.
That cheeky Braun, that cheeky Kev. Jericho gets dropped down. He's all happy for his boy winning.
Yeah.
What a celebration.
Yeah. Wow.
What a shark cage match.
What a shark cage match.
Yeah, I think I've watched this once when it happened, and I remember being, wow, they really want to sell a shark cage. Mm. They just really need to sell that toy that they were pushing. And so happened, came out just before this match. That's like really Disney-esque thing. Star Wars, Batman thing we've talked about before. It's like, was this done organically, or is it because we need to sell some toys?
I mean, Jericho had been interfering in like all of Owens' matches,
of
course. It did kind of make sense.
Yeah, I liked it just as much as I liked it before. It had their classic Roman spots, your Owen spots. They do cool stuff. Roman's got some cool moves, power bombs and all that stuff, the Samoan drops. Owens with the splashes, like everything they do, they had good chemistry too as well. And they had multiple matches before together. So this one, like I remember, and I'm like, wouldn't it have been going down as like an all-time classic if maybe it was just a one-on-one match? Because these two probably could have delivered it. Here, I didn't hate it. I still like thought it had some really cool stuff that definitely got my attention. But it has this, again, this stupid gimmick that's just like, all right, like, it literally, these guys are actually really talented. And what I haven't got from Kevin Owens in WWE is just like straight up like the wrestling that he really like used to do that I liked on the indies as Kevin Steen. Still hasn't like hit that for me. Yeah, he has his good matches with Roman and Sammy even, but nothing's really like hit. Like, what's the best match ever Kevin Owens? What's that going to be? Other than those John Cena ones that comes to mind.
I would say Cena, I'd say Roman, I'd say Sammy.
Right, like So
that's more than most.
It's true. Yeah, I'm a big Steen fan. I feel like once he got to WWE, he became really WWE-ified.
I actually completely disagree. I think he's one of the only performers on that roster that whatever the match is, he gives it everything.
He's good. He's great. Don't get me wrong.
He like sacrifices his body. You look at him and he doesn't have a classic wrestling look at all.
Right.
Something that Vince would go for. And I think he knows that. And I think he feels he has to prove himself
for sure
every time. I love his chemistry, Roman. I think pretty much all their matches have been really good. Like,
yeah, Owens has good matches.
It was really interesting watching this because we've kind of just finished their series of matches with as the heel and Kevin Owens as the babyface. This match kind of that we mentioned, like TM61 AOP getting overshadowed by DIY Revival. This one got overshadowed by AJ Styles, John Cena.
Yeah.
That happened shortly after, which is another awesome match.
Right.
And also, I think the Roman hate is very strong at this time. But watching back a bit removed, I really enjoyed this. I think they, yeah, their chemistry, both guys don't really care about hurting each other too much. That like they lay it in pretty thick. And I thought the shark cage, as ridiculous as it is, it did make sense for me because Jericho had been interfering a lot. And Jericho is someone like a Cornette who can sell this really well. And the visual of it being in the Alamo Dome. I actually thought if it's to sell a toy, I thought this was a pretty good way to sell this toy. I went a great white with one tooth, a 4.25.
Wow, we are very different because this got a Mako with some teeth from me. This was my lowest, I think.
Oh, really?
From these ones. I watched this live, and again, I like Kevin Owens. I like Roman Reigns. Just like, yeah, it was kind of the same way with their recent feud that you just mentioned with the weird finish. It had a wonky finish. Something happened where he was stuck.
Well, Kevin Owens won the match because Roman was on the floor for
that's
10
right,
and
yeah.
stand up
and like handcuffs. And it made me go, I was into it, and then that happened, and it's unfortunate. But yeah, for me, it's like, I'll stand my ground. Roman is great. And in 2017, he was getting like the boost, but he could work. He could do some cool stuff. It just, I really think I would have a different opinion if it was just like without the gimmick that really didn't tie into anything in the end. But it was, there's a better match between
it's
these
weird,
two.
It's weird Strowman coming out.
Yeah.
But the
again,
crowd
like,
were into him. Like, listen to the pop when Strowman comes out here.
Well, I haven't watched him wrestle too much yet.
I think this was around the time, I guess, he'd been doing the like ambulance spot and all of that. I think that was like end of 2016.
I'm not finished with you yet.
Yeah. But then they go on to set up Undertaker Roman in the Rumble this night, I think, don't they?
So why would you... Oh, my God. Yeah.
Well, I think the next pay-per-view would be Roman Braun, I assume.
Yeah.
And then... But they have the... Roman, I think, eliminates Undertaker, maybe? Or they definitely have a moment where they, like, stare at each other in this.
But all overshadowed by Cena, AJ Styles.
Yeah. Yeah. Or what was overshadowed more? Like, AJ Cena or, like... Big Show on one of those segues to get to the ring.
God.
Do you remember this is that
fuck.
Rumble?
Yeah.
Because
damn,
Cesaro like just sprinted to the ring, but all the big guys are on these segues, like driving to the ring.
Yeah, true. Fuck.
That was funny. Meltzer gave this a 4.5 star.
Yeah.
Cage match an 8.06.
Yeah, so people like this match.
Yeah.
It's on the higher end for shark cage matches.
I realize I've seen two shark cage matches
live.
Yeah,
this one,
not this one. I saw the Takeover Toronto. I also saw, remember, Big Cass versus the Big Show with Enzo Amore in a
shark cage. Yeah, when was that?
SummerSlam in Brooklyn. Fuck. I think was it this year? It might have even been this year or the following year.
So they were really pushing the
shark
cage.
They were really pushing it. I think it was also 2017.
Wow.
That was a terrible match.
Yeah, we didn't pick that.
Looking at some other ones, you already mentioned the, was it Chief J Strongbow versus
in
Don Kent.
Shark, they fucking fight in a shark cage. It's so stupid.
There was Isaac Yankum versus Bret Hart in a steel cage match with Jerry Lawler.
Yes.
What else did we have? Randy Savage versus the Honky Tonk Man.
Damn.
Butch Reed versus Ron Simmons.
Okay.
Jeff Jarrett versus Razor Ramon. So many great
classic
shark cage matches out there.
None involving sharks.
No.
No sharks were harmed in the making of this show.
No.
But
shall we? Do you want to go to feedback first, or shall we give our pick of the greatest shark cage match?
Yeah, the Sting Ric Flair one, because it's not technically a shark cage match. It has someone in one, but regardless,
what the gimmick should do. It keeps JJ Dillon completely out of it. But Dillon's like, all right, I guess I'm not going to be involved.
I will say the one from the 83, Buzz Sawyer, Tommy Rich, was pretty interesting to just watch. No commentary on this like YouTube or network video because it's like fan cam. That was pretty cool because it's just like cool to see where in 1983 people were filling this arena to watch this and were like super into it. So it was very interesting. So like I think that definitely gets my my nod here. But I'm gonna go off. We're gonna be on opposite ends. I'm gonna stick with my guns and go with the one that gave me the most entertainment, and that was Triple H versus Owen Hart with China hanging from the shark cage for no reason at all. It reminded me of Batman in the 60s when he's hanging on the bat ladder and there's a shark. It just reminded me of that.
Oh, the helicopter?
Yeah, it's like,
and
why?
He uses the bat shark repellent.
Yeah, shark repellent. That's right. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
That's what they were going for in this bit here. So I'm going to go with that. Out of all of them, the highlight of shark cage matches will forever be Shane Thorne jumping off something in a shark cage match, because it was the sickest thing. But for me, the visual of China is what I wanted from watching such a ridiculous stipulation. So that's why I'm picking it.
I'm going to go with Owens versus Roman.
Yes.
Because I think probably the best match is Sting versus Ric Flair.
Yeah.
But I don't get enough shark cage.
Yeah, exactly.
This one, I think they had a really good match, which was entertaining.
Yeah.
And Jericho was also great in the shark cage. So that, for me, as a shark cage match, is the best match.
That you should put this on your Tinder bio. Ask me about the shark cage matches in wrestling, because I'll tell you everything about them.
I've got fully vaxxed on it now.
Yeah. Happy shark
fully
week.
Fully vaxxed and full of shark facts.
Yeah. Wow. There you go. Do you know any more shark facts?
Did you know sharks don't have any bones in their body?
They have teeth, though.
They have teeth, though.
Yeah. Sharks also, they got, I don't know, I had it written down.
They eat people.
Only if they're provoked.
Only if provoked.
Yeah.
Don't you punch them on the nose? Isn't that a thing?
You're supposed to, but like...
You win. You win a fight if you just
punch... You're going to punch a shark.
How do you
nose?
Punch underwater anyway? It would be super slow
motion.
Slower,
yeah.
Yeah.
It still works.
You're dead. You're dead. You meet a shark, you're dead.
I've seen Brock Lesnar fight a shark for that SummerSlam ad.
Oh, true.
Remember, F5's a shark.
Yeah, he does.
It's lit.
And Mark Miro is like, yeah, you can have
it. Let's see what you guys are in, because I see some feedback here, some two pieces. I'll start. Do you want to start off here?
Oh, because you want to read Jesse's.
Yeah.
Okay. We go to Andrew from Cape Breton, who says, this is a weird stipulation match, and even when I saw it when I was a kid, I never remembered the term shark cage. The first match I remember was a Raw match from 95 between Bret Hart and the precursor to Britt Baker, Isaac Yankem, DDS. The person in the shark cage was Jerry Lawler, and he was complaining before the match that he was scared of heights and would get nosebleeds. Sure enough, when he's suspended in a cage, he gets one. Apparently, he had picked his nose beforehand, which got the blood.
Ew.
Like, what? Wrestlers are so weird. Just fucking capsules, dude. Yeah. Of course, seeing my favorite tag team name of TM61 featuring Chaos member Mikey Nichols and Slapjack, I thought I'd go into what TM61 is as it relates to Pokemon.
Yes.
Starting in the fourth generation of games in 2006, TM61 was a move called Will-O-Wisp. Yes, we covered this on Up Next about 3 years ago, Andrew. It's a fire-type status move that burns the opponent. It is very handy and competitive, as the burn status halves a Pokemon's attack stat. However, after 13 years of the same TM, it was changed in 2019, long after the Mighty had fallen. It is now Guard Swap, which switches the defense and special defense stat boosts. Very situational and not as handy.
So TM61 is now considered this. It's changed from Will-O-the-Wisp to Guard Swap. Well, thank you,
Andrew. It sounds nowhere near as good.
Yeah, Guard Swap. I guess that's what's his name, Slapjack, had to do.
Guard Swap,
Guard Swap his guard. That fucking paper plate.
He finishes with, lastly, at work, it's very frowned upon to stand under a suspended load, as if the load drops, it could lead to a fatality. Usually crane lifts or even my job with scaffolding, the area is flagged off with red flagging, and crossing it out without permission could lead to someone getting fired. Considering that, shark cage matches are really bad ideas.
Especially when they're above the ring.
Yeah.
What if they fall on them?
Yeah.
It could suck. That would really... Yeah, you could kill someone.
You know, in theater, that's why it's bad luck to whistle on a stage. Because it used to be a signal for, like, people in the flights to, like, lower and lift things. So if you're on stage just whistling, this guy might think, oh, shit, they need that down. And you've got scenery drop on your head.
Jeez. Mm. Wow. Well, Andrew's taught us a lot.
Yeah. And didn't give us his favorite shot. Thank you, Andrew.
No, he loves TM61, I guess.
TM61 and Bret Hart versus Isaac Yankem.
We go to our second and last. Jesse from the 6. He says, man, Precious Paul sure spent a lot of time hanging around in shark cages. Yeah. When Davey first mentioned this idea for Best Match Ever, I thought it was a joke, but there are a handful of very good matches.
It was a joke. It was a joke. Start with,
yeah, we're doing Shark Boy next year. Yeah. I found the very first match interesting. I know Stone Cold and other old-timers all thought highly of Buzz Sawyer, but I had never seen his work before. Tommy Rich is something of an unfortunate punchline in wrestling. He won the NWA World title at a young age in 1981 and lost it rather quickly. He never regained that level of spotlight and was kind of seen as a busted flush. But as we see here, that's not a fair assessment. He was crazy over to this Atlanta crowd. Mm. Also interested was Unforgiven 1998. Hunter and DX had already basically turned babyface and were over with the crowd, but were heels in the program. Not a great match. TMDK, the Mighty Don't Kneel, a.k.a. TM61, versus AOP was a fine match, but it had the misfortune of being on the same card as the greatest WWE tag match ever. So it's not well remembered. I'm still baffled Vince fucked up AOP on the main roster. Ultimately, the question of which of these is the best match ever is not a difficult one to answer. It's Sting versus Flair, and it's not even close. Still, I had fun watching back these matches. Take care.
Well, thank you, Jesse.
Wow, Jesse. So he just, he hates the one I liked, but he loves Sting and Flair, and he's stern on his choice.
Mm.
So he's picking that.
Yes.
I understand. And I didn't even think I fucked up reading his feedback.
No, you did. You did good.
He probably knew I would read it, so he was like, smaller words. Assessment. Yeah, he didn't use any hard words. Ultimately, that's not a hard word. I can read that. Misfortune. Grab.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Look at me. I'm either really smart, or he dumbed it down for his audience.
Well, he just, we just saw him recently, so yeah. he was reminded of you, and was like, all right.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. I got to know what words he can say.
I got to know what words.
He didn't say lit.
No.
In his thing. We got to get Jesse on for a best match ever because he's very well versed in his WCW retro wrestling stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I know he's. We told him to brew on some ideas, Jesse from the Six. He saw the new pad.
Mm.
He loves our shark cage.
Yeah. He does.
So thank you for the feedback there, guys. We post up feedback for any of these shows here on the Patreon on like the weekends because we usually record Tuesdays and Wednesdays for any upcoming stuff you guys see. Yeah. And that's shark cages.
Yeah. What's a shark's favorite wrestling faction?
Shark Dynasty.
Shark Order. But, all right.
Shark Order? Yeah. That doesn't even sound like New World Order.
The Dark Order!
Oh, you should have said the Shark Order.
What did I say?
Shark Order. I was just like, well, that doesn't sound... The Shark Order sounds great. Yeah.
Like the Shark Order?
There was what? The Shark Boy had like what? He was from the Deep Blue Sea or the Tank? He had his training facility called the Tank or something.
You've already got Long John Silver in the Shark Order.
Long John Silver in the Shark Order. Wow.
Yeah.
Comes out with a hook.
Yeah, trying to... Oh, Hook?
Hook could be... who is the pirate in WWE?
Paul Burchill.
Yeah, he can come in.
Kyrie. Now it's just
Kyrie, obviously, yeah.
Oh, a pirate faction.
But I don't know. Yeah, there definitely needs to be a new pirate in wrestling. It's an untapped gimmick. Like, it failed once and no one wants to touch it, but like... It's chilling. It's someone's gonna. It's there for the taking. To
Kyrie,
be honest,
Kyrie just left.
That's what I mean. So it's like someone better pick up that.
I'd be the pirate.
You would be. You don't look like a pirate.
Does you Kyrie Zane look like a pirate?
Yeah, okay. A good pirate, like a pirate.
I'd be a good pirate.
Like pirates are bad.
I can sword fight.
That's true.
I can fence.
You could be more. You're more of a musketeer than a pirate. Like pirates are mean. They're evil. They like steal people. They
Not
kill
all
sharks.
Pirates.
Not all pirates. Yeah, they kill sharks.
Yeah.
Like shark fin soup. Probably.
Mm.
They probably hate sharks. Because like they get eaten by them and stuff.
But they push people off the plank to be fed by the
sharks. So they're feeding sharks, therefore.
They like sharks.
They do.
Yeah.
That's true. They are feeding sharks. So pirates, good people.
Mm.
Yeah. That's what we learned here today.
And we're going to keep up with this Shark Week thing every year from now on.
Shark Week. Give us ideas for next year's Shark Week and follow the socials for all our shark facts.
Oh, yeah.
Like sharks have glands that can help them feel the temperature changes in water.
Did you know a shark can breathe underwater?
What?
Yeah.
That's why they keep killing people underwater. We hope you're enjoying Shark Week. And you're celebrating just like us, go put on some BBC Planet Earth, Blue Planet, David Attenborough. Go put on some Shark Week Discovery. There's Jackass. I think Brad Paisley was doing. There was all these celebrities doing like random Shark Week stuff. So go check them out because I'm going to be checking them out. And yeah, we hope you had a happy Shark Week.
Yeah. Happy Shark Week, yeah. Guys.
Yeah, we had a lot of fin.
Oh!
Here on Shark Week. That's right, yeah. The Shark Order. We got some other shows coming up. We got a Money in the Bank top five show that is a must listen.
Yes.
Must.
Must.
By the time you're listening to this, you may or may not know. But it's a must listen.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Then we have, what else? We got some other things
it's
coming.
It's stacked this week. We've got John Cena and I will be doing a watch along and review of Slammiversary.
Hell yeah.
On Saturday.
What's the main?
Kenny versus Sammy right. Callahan.
Yeah.
Also the return of the Ultimate X match, which actually the X division's been pretty good there. And who's going to show up? It's Slammiversary, which means... Let's get anyone who's been released and will sign a contract with us to show
Lawn.
Up. Yeah, maybe. And then it's Money in the Bank this Sunday. So join us for the watch long and post show for that. Yeah, so much going on.
Yeah, I might try to catch some of that. I might try coming home. I'm gonna be really fucked up this weekend, but I'm gonna come back on Sunday and I have it off, so I might try to watch some of it. I like Money in the Bank, the gimmick. I think it works pretty – it's interesting to me. So that's all the stuff we got going on, as always, at Up Next Podcast. We almost have 1,000 on Twitter. Why aren't you following us?
Yeah, give us a
follow. To get us to 1,000. We appreciate you guys supporting us here on the Patreon, and we'll be in your ears all over the place. So thanks for hanging out in the deep blue sea, in the shark cages, and that's it. Go have a shark steak, not shark fin soup. Don't eat sharks. Sharks are your friends, not food.
Yes.
Take care. Goodbye. Be safe.
Ahoy!